Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to a surprise edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. I'm here, Kyle Borgannoni, as always, with Matthew Betts. Betts, this kind of is a surprise for our listeners.
It was a surprise to me this week when you were like, hey man, we're recording. I was like, oh, okay, sounds good. Because yeah, when I closed out the show last week before the conference championship slate, I said, I'll see you guys next week. And then I said, wait, actually, never mind. We'll see you for the Super Bowl. And you said, you know what? We love this too much. The people need the content. And this is the biggest game of the year. So I guess we got to bring our game. So yeah, we're back for one more show.
Our people are thirsty. That's what they're at. They're at a point of the year where there's not much football. In fact, right now, if you really wanted to get into Pro Bowl DFS, we don't have a show for that. If you're coming here for that, you are at a different level of degeneracy. Actually, you know what? Before I go any further, are you playing Pro Bowl DFS?
I told you, Kyle, don't ask silly questions. Of course I'm going to play some Pro Bowl DFS. Come on. Actually, shout out to the Discord channel for DFS. They were actually asking us. They're like, hey, guys, any tips on the Pro Bowl? And I have just never been more proud of our listeners, of people that follow us. Like, that is a new level of, like you said, degeneracy. And I'm with you. So, yeah, let's play some Pro Bowl DFS. I might give a couple tips. I'll do some research over the next couple of days for the Pro Bowl, but find that in the Discord channel. It should be a ton of fun.
I will not be giving any tips. However, I do need to congratulate you. Your boy, Hunter Renfro, Pro Bowler Hunter Renfro, is somebody you can play. He was chosen as an alternate for, well, my boy, Keenan Allen, who won't be playing in the game. But regardless, I hope you have a lot of fun with that. On this show today, you're listening wherever you're at. You're on a run. You're on the toilet. You're probably not mowing the lawn, depending on what part of the country and what time of the year. It's just not time for that. We're going to be going over our early thoughts about the Super Bowl, just from a betting perspective, kind of giving you some stats, an overview of how it's been against the spread. What does the public say? Talk about MVP a little bit, some of our early favorite bets. But this show is mostly gearing up for the Super Bowl. We wanted to give a overview of showdown strategy. That's something we do in the offseason. We have some content on the website. But I think it's really important just to get a refresher, because maybe a lot of you out there, you've been playing the main slate like us, and the showdown slate is something that you feel kind of rusty. Maybe you were playing those Thursday nights, you're reading Betts' article. But yeah, is there anything that you just want to say to people like, hey, this is a great time just to refresh?
Yeah, definitely. And if you're looking for a written resource on some of the stuff we're going to talk about, there is an article up in the DFS Pass. From this past summer, I wrote an article about how to win showdown slates, and it talks a lot about just the strategy behind it, the game theory behind it. It's just a completely different animal, different conversation compared to our usual main slate approach. So yes, very different, and it is one that the sites are ready for. Like, if you look at the contest that DraftKings and FanDuel are offering for the Super Bowl, it is insane how much money they have as far as these contests go, because people want to play and people want some action in the game. So yeah, it should be a ton of fun. I'm pretty excited about it. And doing those articles every Thursday night in the DFS Pass, I feel like it's really helped me kind of get an understanding that this is just one of those situations where it's a small slate. Obviously, it's one game. The player pool is small. And you just embrace variance and you embrace that GPP life. So I'm excited to talk about it today.
All the content will be up this next week. So if you're kind of one of those people, it's like, where is everything? Well, guys, come on. Give us a little bit of time. Give us a break. We'll have all the content up for first look pricing. Talk about it from a Vegas perspective. Give you some of our picks. But yeah, we got one game to work with. So let's talk about that from kind of a 10,000 foot view. Some of these betting lines and some of our favorite early bets that we like. But the line right now, currently, as of our recording Thursday, is the Rams -4.5, and the over-under is set at 48.5. And I'll just say, I've already taken a stance on the under on this. And then you can get an alternate under of 47.5. I know that's a point, but 47.5 is plus money right now on DraftKings. So I've already done that. Any quick thoughts on just the overall line before we get into nitty gritty?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And you look at the line movement too. This line opened actually at 50, and then right away within the first few hours, actually got bet down to 49, and then eventually where it is right now at 48.5. So, you know, Kyle and the other people that are betting thousands on this are moving the lines towards the under. And I think it makes sense, right? Like, looking at how the Bengals have played over the last couple of weeks, like, they're not putting up 30-point performances like some other offenses have or can. Certainly it's in their bag of tricks. We've seen it. But yeah, I mean, we're seeing more conservative play calling potentially from these head coaches in the most important game that either of them have ever coached in potentially, you know. So, like, it's one of those situations where I think the under is a sharp play. The line kind of feels efficient at this point. Like, I don't have a strong take now, but when it was at 50, I definitely like the under for sure.
I know a lot of people, just in terms of where the money's been, it's been Bengals plus 4.5, but that line stayed pretty steady. I think it's a really good line because I like the Rams. I think they're just a better team. And maybe part of this podcast is you talking me out of my Joe Burrow bias, because he's your boy, but I'm totally okay saying he is not my boy.
I mean, you just don't like to have fun, man. How can you not be a fan of Joe Burrow? And obviously, with my physical therapy background, like, just seeing this guy crush after his serious injury always brings a smile to my face and has a warm spot in my heart, I'll say. So, yeah, let's go, Joey B.
Yeah, I've been saying this around the office that maybe it's a little bit of the close. I wouldn't call him arrogant, but I think he thinks he's the coolest guy in the room. And I usually like to bet against that person. The problem is, sometimes you are the coolest person in the room and your name is Tom Brady, and I've tried to bet against you for years. And so maybe that's not the best betting strategy, but let me go over some overarching stats about the Super Bowl and the way the lines work. Favorites in Super Bowl history, there's been 55 Super Bowls. Favorites are 35 and 20 straight up. Okay, so if you're just going to bet the Rams, history's on your side. But the spread, get this, 27 26 and 2 against the spread. Vegas knows what they're doing when it comes to the spreads, and it comes to, you know, for us, we use DraftKings Sportsbook. So over the last 16 years, the outright winner has covered the Super Bowl spread in each game. So whoever you're picking over the last 16 years, let's say you say it's the Rams, they're going to cover the spread. That's what it says. And then the over-under has been super efficient too, 26, 27, and 1. So what advice can you give listeners who think they have a really hot read on the line?
Flip a coin. Yeah, those stats are pretty crazy. I mean, it just shows you that, like, Vegas is so smart and they always win with these kind of situations. That's why betting lines and totals is pretty difficult to beat. That's why the props market is a lot more, I don't say a lot more, but definitely easier to win in and be profitable. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's fun. It's the Super Bowl, so people probably want to have a little something on it, obviously. But yeah, it's obviously very tough to beat those lines. And I think the one thing that sticks out, though, to me is that you were just saying, you know, like, the against the spread metrics, and when the winner covers, it's like, that tells me if you like the Bengals and they cover, like, they're probably just going to win, right? Don't you think? I mean, right. I feel like that's probably what I would say line. Is if you like that, just take the money line. Yeah, for sure. So if you like Cincy, obviously you're getting plus odds there. I think last time I looked, it was like plus 190 or plus 200 or something like that.
Yep. The Bengals this year are 13-7 against the spread, and they've covered the spread in 7 straight games. So Bengals are a hot team. A lot of people like them, obviously. I think for me personally, I'm not taking a stance on just the game line. I've only done the over-under. But the Super Bowl MVP, I think, is the one that is really fun because you're getting plus odds on everyone. So if you like one of the quarterbacks, hey, that's pretty good. But where are you at on Super Bowl MVP, early leans, any, you know, dark horses, and maybe just give people some strategy if they've never done this before?
Yeah, so I went back and looked at all the Super Bowl MVP winners since the year 2000, and in that sample, the quarterback has won it 13 out of 21 years. That is about 62%, just shy of that. A non-quarterback has won it then, obviously, 8 times. And in that sample of non-quarterbacks that have won it, a wide receiver has won it 4 times. And then the other 4 actually were all on defense. So it doesn't seem like it's likely that a tight end is going to win this award or a running back is going to win this award. And obviously, the betting lines and markets kind of show that with the odds that you log into your sportsbook and see that. So I think my approach here is, like, looking at the quarterbacks, I mean, Matthew Stafford obviously makes sense if you think he has an awesome game and the Rams win. We know that the Super Bowl winner as well, the winning team, the MVP comes from that team every single year since the first Super Bowl, except for one time. So whoever you like to win the game, you should also be correlating that with your MVP bet. And I think with that in mind, knowing quarterbacks win it a lot, knowing that we just talked about when these guys are covering the spread, they're also winning the game. Like, if you like the Bengals to win, you might as well just take Joe Burrow to win MVP. It seems better because you're getting plus 225 instead of the plus 200 that I said the money line was at. So I think that's kind of a sharp play, is if you're on that, might as well take Joe Burrow to win the MVP here.
I think I might just do that to make myself feel better if he does well. Like, that's the only thing I want to be able to sleep at night, is say, I hate that he won. Not a huge fan of a boy Burrow, but if they win, I win. And that's really what this is all about, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And also, too, like, I know you have a little stat in here that 20% of the vote is from fans voting online in the fourth quarter. Like, if it's a tight game and let's say the Bengals come from behind and win in the fourth quarter, like, people not named Kyle just love Joe Burrow. So that's a huge factor as well there, that the public does have a say in some aspect, at least, as to who wins this award. I also am pretty interested in Cooper Kupp at plus 600. What are your thoughts there as far as the wide receiver?
Well, stats-wise, you know you're probably going to be able to bank 90 yards. And yes, it's kind of a big deal knowing that fans, and a lot of fans play fantasy football, know that he was arguably the best player in fantasy this year, maybe the second greatest wide receiver season of all time behind Jerry Rice. So yeah, it's only 20% of the vote, but it's just fun to think about the momentum that happens in a fourth quarter. And we love a good narrative. We love a good story. I mean, the other 80% is from media members. And, you know, generally speaking, they're going to pick the quarterback that comes behind in the fourth quarter and does that. But since I like this game to be an under, I do think there's some interesting names. Let's say you don't get a 2-touchdown game from a quarterback. Like, that's where this kind of gets interesting, where you can look at other names. Aaron Donald's interesting as a defensive player being that high. I mean, he has the fourth highest odds of any of these players, which is kind of ridiculous. You wouldn't normally see that from a defensive player. I'm not saying it's a good bet, but it's just an interesting thing on the board. And then, yeah, Mixon's way down there. Let's say Mixon gets 2 touchdowns, this game hits the under, and the Bengals win. You get him at plus 4,500, a starting running back. I think that's pretty good odds.
Yeah, I'm not betting that.
I'm not saying do it. I'm saying it's a good value.
What I'm thinking of is a couple years ago, Chiefs and Niners, and it was Damian Williams. Remember that? Like, he was just awesome in that game. And he should have won it. He deserved it, honestly, but they gave it to Mahomes. So it just seems like one of those things that even though there's probably value on it, like, the chances of people actually doing that or the voters giving it to him are just so low. But I do think there's value in some of these defensive guys, especially on the Rams. Like, one of the biggest mismatches in this game is the defensive line of the Rams, the offensive line of the Bengals. That's going to be the storyline for the next, you know, 1.5 weeks. Like, Donald at plus 1,600 is kind of fun. Von Miller at plus 4,500 is kind of fun. You get a sack, maybe a strip sack, a recovery, a scoop and score, or something like that, where it can just kind of go sideways quick. Like, that's pretty interesting if you like the under in this game.
So we'll talk more about that and kind of give our official takes next week. I also think it would be fun if you and I got to build a crazy parlay together, and that way all of our DFSers can root with us. So we'll try to put that in. But really quickly, before we get into showdown strategy, let's go back and forth through a couple of early bets we like. And by the time you hear this, the lines might change. That's okay. It does give you a lean of just where we're at in this game. So you go first.
Yeah, for sure. The one that I like and I already took is Cam Akers under 64.5 rushing yards. On the website, actually, right now, I did a pretty comprehensive article looking at, like, you know, Cam Akers coming off his Achilles injury is incredible, but being back on the field doesn't really correlate with back to 100% performance, and we're seeing that extremely inefficient in the run game. Since he obviously doesn't scare you from a matchup perspective, but he's just been insanely inefficient. And looking at, like, next-gen stats, they have a metric called rush yards over expectation. So essentially, it's like, are you helping create yards more than what you're supposed to, more than just what's blocked for you? And he's been among the worst of all running backs in the playoffs so far. And I know it's a small sample. It's only been a few games. But still, I'm happy to take an under on running back that still probably isn't 100% that we've seen be really inefficient thus far in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a bet on the inefficiency that we've seen so far. So yeah, that one looks pretty solid. I'm going to go back to the well here. and maybe Vegas hasn't heard this podcast. I mean, we're sponsored by DraftKings, so clearly they listen in to everything that we've ever said. But guys, come on. Cincinnati, right now, you can get them over 1.5 field goals. It's worked 2 weeks in a row. It's bound to work again. I've already bet this. Evan McPherson. I won't say I was on it first, but I have been talking about him for a while.
He's your boy, man. He's the official kicker of this show, and he just has been cashing this every week. It's been so fun. So, yeah, I can't wait for them to get down there right around like the 35, you know, 4th and 2. Should go for it. What do they do? Here comes McPherson. Kyle's already just buying something new online as that kick goes through the uprights. So, yes, I like that bet a lot.
If he wins MVP, which, yeah, I should probably put in a small wager there, then I'll get a jersey or two. No, I'm not putting in McPherson MVP. Don't waste your money, people.
Don't do that. Yes.
What's next for you?
Yeah, I like the quarterback rushing props. I've been talking about it a couple of weeks in a row. And I like the Burrow over 11.5 rush yards line. It's minus 115 across most of the books that I've seen. The rationale here for Joe Burrow is just in this game where I think for the Bengals to win this game, it's going to take Burrow overcoming some difficult situations to do it. Maybe a couple, you know, third and long scrambles, something like that. We saw it against the Chiefs. When the offensive line broke down, Burrow was actually able to escape and create yards for himself. So in this matchup, where certainly the Cincy offensive line is a weakness, probably relative to the Rams defensive line, we could see him under pressure a bunch, you know, tuck it and run. So over 11.5 for me sounds pretty good.
Staying with Burrow, I have an under on his pass attempts. I feel like it's been a little high. It was even higher. You could have gotten at 37.5, but on DraftKings, I put under 36.5. It was plus money too, so I felt pretty good. Burrow's average 32.5 pass attempts per game. If I like this game to hit the under, then he's never been a guy that's needed huge volume. He can do it if it's a back and forth affair, but I'm not projecting this game that way. So under 36.5 pass attempts.
Yeah, I like that a lot, definitely. The next one that I have is just correlated exactly with your field goal prop, and I like it to be the first score of the game. So the first score by either team is going to be a field goal is the bet for this. It is plus 115. And the rationale here is, as you said, like the Bengals, they trust McPherson, and he's shown that he can make clutch kicks. His confidence is obvious, and it's really a fun story, actually. But when you look at like the underlying metrics, you know, Cincinnati, they were 22nd in fourth down conversions. They also went for it at the 7th lowest rate in the league. So when it's fourth and short, they're kicking a field goal. Same goes for the Rams. They were 30th in fourth down conversions in the regular season, and they went for it at the sixth lowest rate, excuse me, in the league during the regular season. So I think when push comes to shove, one of those situations where they get there and they say, okay, it's a Super Bowl, it's really important, let's just take the points here and move on to the next possession. So first score of the game to be a field goal, plus 115.
I mentioned earlier, but I've already taken an under on the total, so I feel good about that. And then just a stat, we'll talk about this next week. The most popular thing that people want to bet for some reason is the coin toss. Just so you know, Tails has a 52.7% hit rate. It's not good. Like, just don't. It's not a good plus EV move. If you want to do it just to have some skin in the game because you're addicted, you can. I would encourage you to put your money elsewhere.
Oh, man. That's so funny. Yeah. Well, the fact that it's 52.7, I mean, we know it's a 50-50 proposition every time that coin is flipped. So you would think eventually it's coming back towards heads. So, I mean, maybe I'm Ben Heads. Who knows? But the last one that I have here on the list is either quarterback to be sacked on their first pass attempt. Very, very, very long shot here. Plus 2,500 for this to work out. The Cincy offensive line, as I said, is a concern. So, yes, I will take that bet there with Von Miller and those guys on the defensive line getting after him.
I think I'll be honest. Here's the thing. I've been betting against Joe Burrow in terms of sacks. Like, this whole playoff run, okay? Because it's been really easy money. He was sacked more than any other quarterback in the league during the regular season. And first week, you know, in the playoffs against the Raiders, that was easy cash money. Against the Titans, 9 sacks, yes, please. And you know what? What happened last week is I made a very simple wager, all right? It was Joe Burrow over 250 passing yards, check. Patrick Mahomes, 250 passing yards, check. And the Chiefs to have just 2 sacks. And of course, they have 1. And Burrow probably, I mean, what was it, like 3 or 4 times he got out of near sacks. So I'm a little bitter. This man has cost me some money. And and he's flaunting his gold chain necklace thinking he's the coolest guy in town. I don't like it, Joe. And so I will be betting some sacks against Joe Burrow.
And hey, don't even think twice about it. Those diamonds are real. He has told us they are real diamonds, man. Come on.
All right, before we get into strategy, I posted in here just the early look at some of the pricing. And I'll have a whole article that comes out, and we'll talk more about, you know, showdown related stuff and how you do it. But any quick first takes on just the players and where they're at, because Cooper Kupp is elevated in price above even the quarterbacks, which is kind of rare, right? Last year it was like Mahomes or Brady were the clear options, and then you kind of figured out where else you would go with the captain spot. But anybody that stands out to you price-wise just in terms of how they line up with other people?
Yeah, I think the first thing that sticks out is just Cooper Kupp, like you said, at the top of the pricing. We often don't see this that much on showdown slates where their more expensive skill position players are than their quarterbacks. So I think, you know, you're not sneaking by anyone. He's going to be the most popular quarterback, captain play on the slate. I think with pretty high confidence, we can say that. So not saying that we can't do that. We just have to be cognizant when we are building lineups to get different elsewhere if you are going to go that route. So that's definitely in play for sure. And then I will say the other thing that kind of sticks out here, looking down at like the pricing, like Tyler Higbee's pretty far down there. I know he's dealing with the MCL sprain. We're not sure if he's going to play. But DraftKings especially like was not sleeping on Kendall Blanton. Like you probably could have got him last week at the Stone Min if you played the showdown slate for that game. And he's priced just $200 less than that. So you're not getting a discount on the Kendall Blanton breakout from last week. So the pricing overall I think looks pretty dang efficient for where we are at this point in the season.
Something that just sticks out to me is more of an annoying thing, but if you go all the way down to kickers, which we got to talk about kickers, right? If we're talking about the flex, we like to skim to the under. Elliott Fry is the backup kicker, which means he's on the practice squad, yet he's priced higher than Matt Gay. Explain this to me.
I mean, they just know that Zach Taylor loves to kick field goals, so they're just making sure that they have that part locked in.
That just drove me insane when I first saw that. I'll just say that there's a big discrepancy between Akers and Mixon, and there should be, but it's massive. You know, Mixon is 9,600, Akers is 6,400 in the flex, and I can imagine that a lot of lineups will be using either the quarterbacks as the captain or, you know, one of the pass catchers like Kupp or, you know, Chase as the captain. So those running backs and their roster percentage is what I'm looking at the most, because people probably won't be playing both of them in the same lineup because that's just a better move in general. We'll talk about strategy wise, but there's just a big price gap. And so your roster construction looks so different. So that's the point that I think you and I can zero in on and kind of say, what's the best move? Do you like this game to hit the under? Then generally speaking, you would like the running backs. You would want to play, you know, Mixon and the Cincy defense or, you know, Akers and the Rams defense. And I think the Rams defense will be a popular play because of the narrative and the sacks and those kind of things. But I just, as the week goes on and as we, you know, talk about next week, you and I will give our official picks. That's a stance that I feel like early on I'm trying to figure out, do I want to fade one of these running backs? You know, obviously everybody's in play, but do I want to be underweight the field on these two guys? Because your lineup construction can look different than anyone else.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point for sure on that one. And the other thing too that sticks out is like teammates that are priced in certain points, like Ja'Marr Chase in the flex is 10-4. T. Higgins down at 7.6. We've seen T. Higgins outscore Ja'Marr Chase several times this year. And maybe you could say, oh, well, the ceiling isn't the exact same because we've seen Ja'Marr Chase have these 203 games. But yeah, I mean, this is one where I think the roster percentage is so important on these guys. Like if the field just assumes that Chase is the one and it's definitely going to be that way, then I'm happy to take a stance on a cheaper guy who we know can finish as the slate's overall top scorer. As we saw last week for the Bengals, he was the guy that led them in receiving yards and receptions. So, yeah, I think that's pretty interesting too. T. Higgins, pretty nice value at 7,600 in the flex.
All right, let's talk about some strategy.
Straight cash, homie.
Betts and I have done this show before, but we wanted to refresh it. So if you're a person that says, hey, you know what, I know how to approach showdown, we're going to introduce just some concepts that you and I have been toying around with, and we definitely want to introduce more and more in 2022, because, dude, we're not going anywhere, right? Like, you and I, we're still hanging out this next year?
We're here for it, man. We're here.
So for showdown strategy, obviously, we're talking about one game. You only get one shot. Little different than what we're talking about with you know, main slate where we're just trying to figure out, like, how do I find the maximum amount of correlation and get exposure to a couple different game environments? Well, we have one game environment. And so what really matters to me in terms of game theory is you're trying to find optimal plays, but you're also weighing out the benefits and you're weighing out the field. Like, I think the field is even more important than anything else with Showdown because everybody's having these players in their lineup, right? Like Cooper Kupp, if we're projecting him as the most popular play, which we're not for a wide receiver, but like he's easily the third most right behind the quarterbacks. Like it's pretty easy to say he's the dude in captain spot that people are going to be playing. How do I weigh that with what the field is going to do? And you and I have talked about this before, but we're talking about duplicates. Like you're having a lineup that is probably going to be duplicated because everybody else is playing Kupp. So how do you approach that differently? So I want to ask you a question, Betts. Just a simple, you know, thought process. Not a trick question, hopefully. But when we talk about roster percentages, which combination would you rather have on your team? Would you rather have two players that are rostered 50%, one of them's 50%, and one of them's 30%? Or would you rather have a player that's 65 and 15%? Both of those combinations add up to 80%. But which one of those is probably going to help you win a GPP?
Yes, I feel like I'm this is a test, and I have to pass this question. In that situation, I definitely want the lineup that has the 15% roster players. So you're looking for ways that you can just get different compared to the field. And, you know, in those situations, like let's say Cooper Kupp, for example, is 65% rostered. Like, if you fade him, like, what are you gaining in that situation? Probably not that much, right? But if you say, I see Odell Beckham is going to be insanely popular this week. But listen, if it just goes to Van Jefferson just this once and he's the 15% guy, that's how you're getting different. You're not getting different really in these situations by just fading like the best play on the slate. He's the best play for a reason. So I want that differentiator at the bottom of my lineup that has that, you know, 10, 15, 20% roster percentage. So yes, that's definitely the way to get different is you got to find that one guy that can be separating you from the field. Because like you said, on a small player pool, it's so easy to get duplicated in these contests.
And a way to kind of measure that, if you're like, I don't know if I'm going to be duplicated, is this lineup going to be that way? Look at salary, because it's a pretty easy correlation. Like normally on a slate, we would say don't leave much money on the table. But in Showdown, you can kind of throw out that rule because you are trying to get different from everyone else. And so as the salary gets closer and closer, like on DraftKings to that 50,000, you're going to find more and more duplicates. Like you're going to find that, let's say, you know, you're using 49,800. You're going to find that probably most lineups, there's 20% of lineups out there that have a similar construction as you. So the way you use salary invites that. Getting unique, especially with some of the players in a game that we like the under, it comes down to finding players that have roles but are stupid cheap. I mean, there's some players out there that we can kind of confidently say, like, I'm willing to use this person even at the price. So I've seen this happen, but like Samaje Perine, $2,400 is way down there. Chris Evans is $400. Okay. Now we, in our projections, Chris Evans is going to show up for what? Like one touch maybe. And he plays some special teams, but what does that invite if you're playing a player like Perine or Chris Evans?
Yeah, so the first thing is that it lets you just jam in the studs at the top, which when that happens, like it sounds awesome on the surface, and maybe it is the right move for the slate. You know, we just don't know, but maybe it is. But in those situations, like you're more likely to say, okay, I have Cooper Kupp, I have Matthew Stafford, I have Jamar Chase, but so does everyone else. That's like a tricky thing to consider. And then the other thing, though, is just with that cheap salary is if you're looking at that, like, when that happens in those really, really low ranges, if there is a good projection on a player for this slate specifically, it's tough to see that. But if there is on other slates, you know, they don't have to do hardly anything to pay that off. $400 on a slate like this on a Showdown slate is essentially the stone min. It's $200 is the stone min for this type of situation. So, yeah, when that happens, like if a player catches two balls for, you know, 24 yards, like they're pretty much paying off their salary. That's how minimal they have to do to get there.
I wouldn't get too cute where you're basically jamming in two guys that are like way under the radar. They just don't have the raw projection to be able to make up for it. But we'll kind of post some of that in our articles this next week. I'll do it in my first look. Is just here's a way when you look at your salary, and let's say you're going under by $700. I think that's great. I think that's a great way to get different. You might even say I need to be under by 1,000 if you don't want duplicates. Now, there are going to be lineups because, you know, a lot of these offenses like are pretty clear, like Cup's the best play on the slate. You know, Chase can easily outdistance himself. Like, it's not hard to look at this game. We've seen these offenses all throughout the playoffs. But once you start getting way down there, like $1,500 below, you're really getting different. So I'm telling you, embrace it. Embrace the fact that you're different than everyone else. But also look at it and say, hey, do I have in my lineup Chris Evans? And then, you know, you're throwing in someone like Trent Taylor, you know, who's like $1,000. He'll return some punts. And it's like, that's a pretty low move. And, you know, it's probably not going to happen. So any other advice you have for people on just salary?
No, I think you pretty much hit on it there. You know, we know that the more you spend, the more likely you're going to be putting in the same lineup as someone else. And therefore, if you are in the winning lineup, you know, everyone else is too. So you're not really getting there. But then at the same time, don't get too cute. I think the sweet spot here is trying to think about getting different as far as the salary you're spending, but with plays that make sense. Like you just said, you know, the chances of Chris Evans, Trent Taylor being in the winning lineup together, I mean, what is that? 2%, 1% likelihood? Like, not going to happen, right? So, yeah, just make sure you're not getting too cute, and then be willing to leave salary on the table for sure is massive in these showdown slates.
Yeah, if you're using an optimizer, then you can set a rule that says, like, I don't want more than one player below, you know, 2K or something like that in my lineup. Like, that's totally fine. We're still talking about correlation. We're just talking about it within one game. And within one game, anything can really happen. If you remember last year in the Super Bowl, the total was like 56.5. Like, it was just massive. The game ended up having a total of 40, and Patrick Mahomes was blitzed nonstop. So the game went completely different than what I think the majority of people thought, including myself. And so in a one-game sample, correlation matters. We're telling ourselves the story, and we're running with it. So let's just play with this example. You and I like the under, I would say. That's kind of like where we lean right now. There's lots of different paths to the under. So what would be a way that you could correlate in your lineup and still honor the fact that we love these passing games?
Yeah, in those situations, like if we think the under is going to come in the over situations, it's more likely that we're seeing several pass catchers enter the optimal lineup as well as their quarterbacks. And I think one way that the field likes to play quarterbacks, because we know they have a high floor, they sometimes have a high ceiling too, depending on the players. But there's paths where this game finishes, you know, 20-17 or something like that, and Stafford throws two touchdowns, but Burrow only throws one or doesn't throw any, and he doesn't enter the optimal lineup. So I think if you like the under in this slate, one way that you can kind of think about that from the quarterbacks, especially with the passing game, is that maybe it's only T. Higgins or maybe it's only Jamar Chase that gets there, not bringing Burrow with him or something along those lines. We're only playing one quarterback in that lineup, I think, is a way to consider it on this slate.
All right, so let's talk about captains. And that's, you know, probably the part of the strategy that's most different than most of our conversation we do this year. So on DraftKings, we're getting 1.5 times the price, 1.5 times, you know, what we're getting in terms of production. Why is wide receiver such a big deal with showdown? Because it even though the field, I think, understands that in a PPR scoring, it's kind of underutilized as they're the optimal captains.
Yeah, I love playing wide receiver at captain on these showdown slates, and it's because we just know that wide receivers have the highest variance associated with them. Sure, at any week, we could get a, you know, 7 catches for 50 yards, and for Cooper Kupp, that's a bad game, but we know he also has huge ceiling, so I want to embrace ceiling outcomes. I don't care if it doesn't work out. I just want to have the ticket in my hand when it does work out, and it's the rationale for playing guys like Jamar Chase, like T. Higgins, like those guys in the captain spot. The best example I can think of, and I feel like we referenced this on the show quite a bit, is that one Monday night game last season where Mike Williams, he'd been kind of just like meh all year, but we know in his bag of tricks is 150-2 any random week when we don't see it coming. So these wide receivers have these massive ceilings that we definitely want to chase, especially on DraftKings. When you think about it, full PPR scoring, 100-yard receiving bonus, that can get there in a massive way. So yes, I think wide receivers are definitely the way I like to build at captain, because again, you're just chasing ceiling and we know they have the highest ones.
Yeah, in the top 1%, which is what we're looking for in a GPP, in the last year, and this is some research that Cody Main of Established Run did. Shout out to Cody. He's freaking smart. Wide receiver was what represented in 31.4% of those lineups as the captain, and that was by far the highest. And so you would think that quarterback would be that, but it wasn't. And then running back actually came in second. So what that tells you is that the field is probably going to play these quarterbacks in their lineup, which makes sense. Like, it's just, you're probably going to see a quarterback in every single lineup. But in the captain spot, you gain a massive amount of leverage if you find the wide receiver, and I would say running back too. You and I generally say that we stay away from kickers and defenses because unless it's a game that just we know is going to hit the under. I mean, the Rams are interesting because we know of the names, but I feel like because of that, the Rams might be an opportunity to come in underweight on the defense because they carry such a big name. Normally, the defenses would be something we wouldn't be talking about that much in a Super Bowl, but I feel like the field will. But like kickers and defense, we're not really going to consider. And then in this game, like, it's unfortunate, but both of the tight ends were hurt in their championship game. So, I mean, we're not going to really be talking about Kendall Blanton or your boy Drew Sample.
The Sampler. The captain. Yes, to be fair, we were talking strictly about captain selection here for defense, kicker, and tight end. Yeah, unless it's, you know, someone like a Kelsey or a Kittle or Mark Andrews that we just see have a ceiling, like, it's just not worth chasing on these guys because you have to hit for these types of players. Like, you probably have to hit two touchdowns to get there. And we know the probability of these types of players getting there is just so minimal. So, yes, you will not be finding me playing a Drew Sample captain lineup for the Super Bowl.
All right. So, in showdown, wide receiver ones average about three less DraftKings points compared to quarterbacks, yet their roster percentage is far different. So, that's like what we care about. Like, yes, the quarterback projections are going to come in super high because we can project 250 yards. For Stafford, we can project, you know, 30 something pass attempts, but the roster percentage is what we're after, and that's why it's so different. And they can just quickly make up the difference with the PPR scoring, and just a long bomb. It just changes things so much. So that's something that you and I love doing, and we love looking at wide receiver twos. In this game, Chase and Kupp are super fun to use. They're going to carry so much more, but we know that T. Higgins has a great ceiling. Like, we've seen him have those games where he was the wide receiver one on the slate. And then I would say Beckham with his red zone role. Let's say Beckham catches two touchdowns and Kupp doesn't catch one. Then I think we can see Beckham compete. But any thoughts about those wide receivers in the captain spot? Any early leans?
Yeah, I think you make a good point as far as the wide receiver two potentially having a chance to get there. And I think my lean is that I'm likely to be okay with Cooper Kupp from the Rams if I'm playing multiple lineups, to be like playing more of them with Kupp, even though he'll be popular, than Beckham, just because we've seen what feels like every week, but most weeks he leads the team in receiving, and it's just insane what he does. But yeah, on the Bengals, I think there's a chance to embrace that we don't really know. And I think anyone says that they know who's going to lead the team in receiving between Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins any week is probably not accurate. Like, it's been back and forth all year. So I'm willing to see what the field does and then say, okay, if that's what the field assumes is going to happen, I'm willing to go the other side of it. So both guys are in play. I will just say, with the price discount on T. Higgins, we may not see quite as big of a discrepancy as we could on other slates. One example is like with the Chiefs. Last week, Tyreek was, I forget what exactly, but a couple thousand more than Travis Kelce. And Kelce came in way more popular because people see the savings, lets you fit the studs. So in those situations too, like, don't be afraid to pay up for the more popular guy to get a little bit contrarian in that captain spot.
All right. So first we talked about captains. Next thing, number two in this section, I want to talk about just the game script. Next week, we'll talk more about from a pace of play perspective and how we see this. But with the line and what we see at 48.5, to me, it's kind of like in no man's land. Like, it was at 50, and I felt like that was way too high. Now it's kind of in this spot where you're like, okay, well, you know, a 24 points from each team feels doable. Like, this feels like this is a game that, you know, is very close. We like that. And I mentioned last year it was a failure, but here's what the field does. This is another stat from Cody's article. So the field used a favorite at the captain spot 60% of the time almost, but the top 1% is doing it 75% of the time. Okay. So the Rams are in a really good spot, all right, to use them in a captain spot and just say it's either Cup or I'm going to go a little different and go like Akers or Beckham. All right. That's what I would say is just your stance right there. If you want to get a little bit, you know, overweight from what the field should do, they should pick a favorite. We know they're going to be picking Stafford a lot. We know they're going to be picking Cup. But if you wanted to go Cup and one of those other two options too at captain, and that's your stance if you're doing like a 20 entry, I think that's where you can get a little bit of leverage. But yeah, the field just doesn't use favorites enough.
Yeah, definitely. And you think about what a favorite is in terms of the Vegas line. They obviously have the higher team total. So the people out there in Vegas with their smart spreadsheets are telling us that the Rams are probably going to score more points than the Bengals is what they're telling us. So when you're looking at captain, we're chasing touchdown upside. And so it makes 100% sense that it would go, okay, a favorite is more likely to land in the captain spot than an underdog. Not saying you should lock in every lineup that way, but I think if you're playing multiple lineups, more of them should have a Ram at the captain based off this data rather than a Bengal.
So let's say you were playing Cup and Stafford in your lineup, because that's going to correlate really easily. Right there, you're running into a roster percentage. But also, we've talked about a lot, like, you don't want to just have a lineup that's duplicated where you end up splitting three Rams and three Bengals. Like, that's I think, how a lot of people get into trouble is they say, okay, I want to find the really cheap guy, Ben Skowronek or something. And they find a cheap guy, but then the rest of their lineup is still duplicated, so it doesn't really matter what they're doing. So kind of explain that strategy of not just going, you know, 3v3 is kind of the way that you and I talk about it.
Yeah, that's definitely the most common roster construction is just, you know, it's going to be three Bengals and three Rams because we kind of want to have equal exposure to both teams and kind of see this back and forth affair. But as you said, that leads to issues with being duplicated. And again, when that happens, you're not getting the right payout, essentially, if you are having a good outcome. So yeah, I love the 4-2 or 2-4 build sort of situations where, let's say, for example, you're playing four Rams and two Bengals or vice versa. I think that's very much in play on this slate. And really, like, what you're looking for in those situations is to say that the field is going to assume that things get spread out very evenly. Well, what if they just condense on one side of the football? Like, what if it is just Joe Burrow and T. Higgins getting this production for the Bengals, and, you know, Jamar Chase comes away with like a 4-for-35 game and people are kind of jamming him in, or they're really trying to find that tight end that fits their build the right way and he goes 2-for-20. Like, that's not going to get there for you. So I think that like uneven split sort of distribution makes sense when you can identify players that can really, you know, dominate targets, can dominate production for their team. And again, it's a way to get different. The field probably doesn't use those roster constructions enough.
Yeah, you got to be willing to go 4-2 or 5-1. I think 5-1 is just, that's where you're getting a ton of leverage. So you can still play somebody. Let's say you're playing five Rams. You can play Jamar Chase because a lot of people are not, you know, having a roster where they're only playing one Bengal. That's totally fine. Right now, my stance is to be overweight on Rams and underweight on Bengals. But I'm still working through my bias. Is there something wrong with me?
I mean, you just don't like to have fun. That's really your issue.
I play DFS, so there's a little bit of fun in me, but I just so you know, people, Betts and I are recording. This is his background right now. It is Burrow, and I don't enjoy podcasting. I enjoy podcasting with Betts, but not Burrow. I didn't invite him. We already have enough. So we need to be willing to get different. We talked about being willing to leave money on the table. I think I have this personal question with injuries, and there's being just one game. I feel like it's really easy to just kind of like go overweight on this mattering a lot. Is there any injuries right now? I know we're still a week out, but anything that you're monitoring from, you know, I know we know the Tyler Higbee news that he hasn't been practicing. It's probably very unlikely. Uzama's probably not playing. So what do we know from an injury perspective early on out? Is there any takes you have?
Well, I think with both those players, like, I mean, our decisions are going to be so much easier if they're obviously ruled out. Spoiler, do not play them. But if they are active, like in a normal regular season game, I don't think that these guys would even really push to be trying to play in this game. But obviously, this is the last game of the season. It's clearly the most important. But both players with the MCL issue could be playing with a brace, could be playing at way less than 100%. And I think if we get that sort of situation around their recovery and around that timeline, like, people are going to know, they're going to recognize Tyler Higbee's name. They know CJ Uzoma from his last couple performances. It would be a very easy fade for me on this slate if roster percentage is going to follow those tight ends.
Is it, from a game theory perspective, if they do play, it helps drive down, you know, the percentage for people like Kendall Blanton, who's had a role recently.
Yeah, I think so. I think for sure. I mean, if they're active and they could aggravate it in game or something like that, or only be active and play, you know, a quarter of the snaps they normally do, or don't run as many routes. Like, yeah, I certainly think it could take some roster percentage off of those ancillary pieces for sure.
I'll share one early take before we get into some mailbag questions, but correlation's really hard because you're looking at a one game sample size and we've said anything can happen. But so I look at the polar like extremes when I look at certain players. So Cooper Kupp and Cam Akers have had extreme negative correlation. And we've been playing Akers in these spots in the playoffs because he's been so cheap. They haven't been, you know, hiking up his price. But now we only have one game. You know, you don't have to play a running back. You know, you don't have to stick them in. So I would say my early stance is to not have a ton of lineups with those two both in it. I know it projects really well for the under, for the Akers, but Akers has just been super inefficient. So I think those will be two that I won't have on a ton of lineups together. And then I'll also mention Beckham. Beckham's totally fine to play with Kupp. Like, don't feel like you have to pick one or the other because the volume's been there and Kupp's projection's just so high. I probably, if I'm playing Beckham, I probably won't be playing another Rams pass catcher, not named Kupp. Like, I'll probably just play Kupp, Beckham, and be done. I won't try to, you know, go to Blanton or Higby. Higby and Beckham have had a super amount of negative correlation, negative 0.78 for those taking notes at home. So, yeah, any early leans you have on just roster construction?
I think when you're rostering, you know, players in the same team as obviously we're going to do on the slate, like, thinking about how they score their fantasy points is so important, especially, like, you know, Tyler Higbee and Odell Beckham. I know Odell Beckham's role has started to grow a lot more as the weeks have gone on, and he's been looking great, honestly. But thinking about how he was scoring when he was first acquired by the Rams over the last, you know, their first, like, four games together, something like that, he was so touchdown dependent. Well, so is Tyler Higbee. So it makes a lot of sense that, like, when Tyler Higbee is hitting an optimal lineup, Odell Beckham is not. And so I think that's why we're seeing that negative correlation, and that makes sense. So I would just think through that process in your head, you know, when player A is going off, how does this affect player B? And I think that sometimes you can see a situation where guys can coexist and their production comes together. And specifically with Cooper Kupp, he's just been so good and has separated so much from his teammates that he has, like, negative correlation with every other skill position, because when he has his games, he's just going bananas. So one way I think that you could approach that is saying, if that happens again, maybe the Rams aren't coming with him. Maybe it's just him dominating in this game.
All right, let's get in a couple mailbag questions.
Mailbag.
You can send in your questions to @thefantasypt, that is Betts, or @Kyle_Borg, that would be me. We are hopefully friendly people on Twitter, sharing our deep thoughts about the life and the universe and everything else in between. I usually share pictures of my kids. Follow us if you need to on Twitter. First question comes in from @SamErgle. He says, how does your lineup construction differ in single or 3 max or 20 max or Betts' new favorite thing, 150 max for a showdown slate? So how do you differ your lineups going forward? So let's start at just the single entry and then get to your degeneracy 150, which used to be me, but now it's you.
Oh man. Yeah. I did it last weekend and it was kind of fun. I didn't have a great week as far as cashing, but it was fun to run those 150. Yeah. I think to answer the question here, when you're looking at single entry on showdown slates, I think it offers you a way to get way more contrarian than you think you normally would, because if things go sideways for the quote-unquote best players, the optimal plays, you're having such a leg up on the competition that you don't even have to have that good of a lineup. Like, just by not having the guys that fail, you're already head and shoulders above the field. So I think my personal strategy is, when I do play single entry, I get weird in those contests. If I'm running 20 max or 150s for showdowns, I'm going to have exposure to several different captains and different game scripts and different scenarios that exist. So I think if you're using an optimizer, obviously be willing to kind of set, like, restrictions around those situations. If you're hand building, then obviously be willing to think through different game scripts and how it affects the players that you're going to play.
You can add up the roster percentage that we have in our roster percentage report. And so some people set a rule that says, you know, it's a little different than most of the season, but, you know, somewhere between 200 and 225%. That is a good rule of thumb. But like we said, anything goes. I just wouldn't try to get too cute in some of mine. Like if you're just, you know, throwing out 150 and you have the bankroll to be able to do it, that's fine. But I want to make sure that I'm not having too many players under $2,000. It just gets way too thin. And then just set up some simple correlation. Like if you're going to play Mixon, you might play some Bengals defense with him. That's fine. If you have Mixon, you're hopefully not having P. Ryan in your lineup. It can happen, but it's not the most correlated one at all. For me on 20 max, I just pick two captains and I'll play 10 lineups with, you know, Cup and 10 lineups with McPherson or whoever you pick for your captain. That's how I'll do it. All right, next one is from Skeptical Millennial. Can you dive into which correlations you're loving the most? Cup, Mixon, 2 QB versus Cup, 1 QB, Burrow, Higgins, Chase. Basically, is there a correlation that you are most in on arranging for a game script? So for us, the under, is there a certain correlation or a certain combination that you're on early of like 2 to 3 players?
Yeah, I think the way that I'm leaning in this game is that just based off what we've seen, if we like the under to come in, we know for whatever reason Zach Taylor is very hesitant to let Joe Burrow do his thing early in the game. Like when they've won, they've kind of had to come back from behind and abandon their first and 10 run for 2 yards, which they love to do. So I think I like the game script where the Rams get out to a lead and then Burrow is forced to throw. So I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards maybe a little bit of coming underweight the field on the running backs, especially for Joe Mixon on the Bengals side, and kind of elevating Higgins and Chase in those lineups and then correlating it with the Rams as well. So that's kind of what I'm leaning early.
Yeah, the running backs is probably where I feel most confident of. And hear us out. We're not saying don't play Mixon or, you know, not right. play. Like, we're going to be playing every single person in this game a ton. We're just saying what combinations do we not like as much. So I said earlier, don't love Cup and Akers because you're just getting so much of the roster percentage that I probably want to, you know, if I'm having one, be underweight or not have the other. I think Stafford can pick this team apart, and I do like, you know, the Rams, you know, defensive front. I said this the year before, and I felt bad saying it. So I like Burrow as a prospect. Okay, hear me out, people. Different than his personality, but I liked him as a prospect. I did bring up the fact that he took a ton of sacks in college, and when he was taking sacks and going on a run, he never got hurt. So you can go back in his rookie profile. If you want to go on the site, I wrote this up and I said, it's a dangerous thing when someone takes that, you know, amount of sacks and they go on the run, eventually that will catch up to them. And unfortunately, his rookie year, that's what happened, right? With Chase Young and your boys, the Washington Commanders.
I didn't know where you were going with that for a second.
That's when he got hurt. But I like the Rams side because I think that you're asking yourself a lot. Like Burrow miraculously got out of those sacks like 3 or 4 times against the Chiefs. That was so frustrating to me because those plays were dead and he would run for a first down. I don't think those are repeatable as much against the Rams. So I'm playing a script more that says that Burrow will be less efficient in this game. And maybe it's because I hate him.
That's definitely what it is. Nah. No bias at all.
Last one from Trev_Arnold. Is Squarnick, I think that's how you say it, right? Squarnick?
You pronounced it like 3 different times in the last 40 minutes.
Old Squarnick?
Ben S. That's who it is.
Old Ben S. Is he a decent play on FanDuel? So on FanDuel, this is a different conversation because you're not getting these crazy discounts, right? Like we were talking about Squarnick earlier. His price was at the point where you can get silly at $600. On FanDuel, he's $6K. So just, if you're not getting a discount, are you interested?
To be clear, I think it's pronounced Skronik. Whatever you're saying is definitely not right.
Skronik.
Anyway, this Rams wide receiver. Is he a decent play at $6K on FanDuel? Small field stuff, I don't think so. If you want to take a shot in large field and just say maybe he hits that long bomb, sure, but the tricky part with both of these offenses is that they don't really spread it out a lot, especially on the Rams side. You know, like if Cup's going to get the volume we think he is, and Beckham's getting more of the targets, and Van Jefferson is still running as the three, like you're getting really, really thin at that wide receiver four price. But given that FanDuel is pretty touchdown heavy, like all he needs to do is catch a touchdown to hit the lineup. that's optimal. So I think it's fine in very, very large field stuff. If you're playing multiple tournaments, maybe have a few lineups or multiple lineups, have a few that have him in it. But I am definitely not building around Kyle's boy, Ben S, this week.
Now, next week, we'll kind of throw out our favorite dart throws because you kind of have to shoot your shot. And honestly, like so many random things can happen in this game. You know, like last year, it's like Gronk catches two. Is it a Scotty Miller score? You know, those are the kind of things that you have to get different and consider. So, yeah, send in your questions, and next week we will give you our official plays, and I will continue to give you guys content and contests to make sure that you guys get to play with us. But any parting words for the people, Betts?
Dude, this is fun. I feel ready for this slate, and we have another week to kind of digest everything, get ready for what's ahead for next week. More props, full game preview, whole nine yards. So stick with us. We'll be back next week. Can't wait for the Super Bowl.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.thefantasyfootballers.com.